Well, welcome everyone to our panel today. The panel topics are acceptance and surrender. So I'm glad you're all here to join us today. We'll open our panel meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Welcome to this Al-Anon meeting panel of the 2024 Yuma AA Roundup. We hope you will find in this fellowship the help and friendship we have been privileged to enjoy. This is an open meeting. We welcome visitors seeking information about Al-Anon, as well as newcomers and members of Al-Anon. Since we have a limited time for each panel, we are doing a modified welcome to allow more time for sharing. Suggested preamble to the 12 steps. The Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic. The anonymity statement. There may be some who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity in any form of press, radio, films, TV, internet, or other electronic media. If so, we respectfully ask that no Al-Anon, Al-Ateen, or AA speaker or member be identified by full name or picture in published, broadcast, or web post reports of our meeting. So, it tells me I'm supposed to introduce myself. Oops. Progress, not perfection. My name is Jean. I am a very grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Al-Ateen. And I would like to introduce our panel members. We have Diane C.
From Denver.
And we have Val H. from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. So each of our panelists are going to share for 10 to 12 minutes, and then we will be open to sharing from the floor. So I believe, Val, you want to go first.
Hi, everyone. My name is Valerie, and I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon. I have to admit, I'll start off with a little honesty statement here. I have to admit that this sharing came really difficult for me this time, and that's not something that usually happens to me. So what I wrote down came to me at 5:30 a.m. this morning. So I'm really hoping two things. Number one, that they make sense, and that number two, they can help someone in a small way. So I'm not quite like Sherry, I can't wing it, so I've written some things down, so I hope you will bear with me. I was raised in Swift Current, Saskatchewan, and I am the eldest of four children and the only girl. There was no excessive drinking in my home, and my parents were extremely hardworking, and I grew up with a very strong work ethic. One of my dad's favorite sayings was, "The only time that success comes before work was in the dictionary." So we didn't have a lot of money growing up, but I don't remember ever wanting or needing anything. My parents were devout Catholics, and we attended church regularly. And I'm really grateful for being raised in a faith, but along with that came a lot of guilt and shame as I tried to live up to some pretty unrealistic expectations, and I felt like I failed pretty much every day. It was very important to my parents, and I think it was a generational thing back then, how we looked to the outside world. So we'd put on our bright shiny shoes and my Easter bonnet, and we'd go off to church, and everybody thought everything was perfect inside of our house when it really wasn't. My mom was very demanding, and my dad was really passive, and I resented him for that. As I grew older, I kind of realized that he behaved that way to keep peace in our family, because my mother's wrath could be pretty severe when she was angry and upset. I had many responsibilities being the oldest. I was responsible for helping to take care of my brothers when my mom was at work. I did as I was told. I was the good little girl who didn't step out of line. I did well in school, and I tried really, really hard to measure up to what I thought was expected of me. I had really low self-esteem. I avoided conflict at all cost, and I was a people pleaser. So I bet it doesn't surprise any of you that I'm sitting right here. So I graduated high school, and I moved to Alberta, another province, to begin my training as a nurse. I was doing what I always wanted to do, and those years were some of the best years of my life. I graduated and got my first job, and I began my career. So I met my first husband at work, and he was everything that I was not, okay? He was good-looking, athletic, and of course, the life of the party. He drank excessively, and my gut told me it wasn't right, but I ignored all of those feelings. He needed me, and I needed to be needed. His father was an alcoholic. His mom was a gambling addict. Two little red flags that I sort of chose to ignore. What could possibly go wrong with a history like that? I mean, really, come on. So we married, and we had all the hopes and dreams of any newlywed couple. Well, married life wasn't quite the vision that I had hoped for. We had a lot of fun. But his drinking continued, and with it came a lot of financial insecurity, job layoffs, and unemployment. And so after a few years of marriage, we decided to have a family, and what began for us was a six-year roller coaster ride as I attempted to become pregnant. I was diagnosed with endometriosis, and so we struggled through multiple tests and procedures. I felt totally inadequate as both a woman and a wife, and his drinking increased. I did miraculously become pregnant, and we had a beautiful baby girl, and I was convinced that drinking would stop. Our lives continued to spiral out of control, and when she was 18 months old, I left. He promised to stop drinking if we returned, and he did stay sober for one whole year, didn't do any program or whatever, so basically white-knuckled it for that year. And of course, during that time, I became pregnant again, and we had a son. The day he was born, the drinking started all over again. So my life was a mess. I was working extra 12-hour shifts in a busy ICU unit to keep our heads above water financially. He was frequently unemployed. I was alone. I was exhausted, angry, resentful, and I was imploding from the inside out. My world was about to shatter at that time, as my husband came home one time and informed me that while I was working a 12-hour shift, he had gone to the bar, gotten drunk, brought a barmaid home to our home, slept with her, and that she was pregnant with his child. So my world fell apart. I had never felt so betrayed, angry, or hurt. And I totally knew at that moment that my marriage was over. So my single life as a single mom began. I was determined to give my children the best life I could. I felt that active alcoholism was no longer in my life. And so I didn't understand the disease of alcoholism. So I didn't understand how his drinking had impacted the rest of us. I worked hard. I paid off our previous debt. And life was calm and peaceful for the first time in my life in our home. We had a routine. There was no crazy alcoholic that I could obsess over. And I got back on my feet financially. So I was on my own for 12 years. And during that time, I met my second husband, and we began dating, and guess what? He's another alcoholic. He had been sober for the 8 years prior to that, and I will never forget the first night we went on our first date, he told me his entire life story, and I thought, oh my God, is there a flashing light above my head that says, if you're alcoholic, pick me, right? So anyways, it took me a really long time to trust him, despite the fact that he was an active member of AA and had been sober for 8 years. I just needed to know if his talk and his walk were matching. So I watched him, and I found out that the two of them were together. So we got married, and then as a result of that, I became enmeshed in the AA fellowship. You know, we got to hang out with other AA members, and for the first time in my life, I actually looked at the alcoholic from their point of view, because to me, it was everything that my previous alcoholic had done, he was doing it to me personally. Didn't understand that there was shame and guilt and all of those things on his side of the equation. And I was more than willing to blame every problem that I had in my life on the alcoholic in my life, because then I didn't have to look at me. So we had been married for a little while, and we were struggling a little bit, and we were actually going to an AA roundup. And we'd been, you know, having a few fights and stuff, and so we had a nice big one prior to going to the AA roundup. And a friend of mine sort of noticed that things were not going well. So she said, Valerie, do you want to go for lunch? So off we went for lunch. And she said, you know, like, you should probably really come to an Al-Anon meeting. And at first I was a bit resentful, thinking, like, really, why do I have to go? Like, it's their problem. Like, what seems to be the issue here? So anyways, I did go. And I am eternally grateful. It was just, at that point, I think I was so desperate that I just wanted to feel better myself. And I could see that he was working his program and he was feeling okay, and I was feeling yucky. And like, what's the matter with this picture, right? So anyways, when she talked to me, it was like she knew who I was inside and she knew how I felt. So that started my journey. And so now we get to the two topics for today, right? Surrender and acceptance. And two things that were really difficult for me. Because I think the surrender was probably the hardest, because I was taught to work hard and to do what I had to do to take care of myself. And then that way I was in control. And if I had to surrender, there was no control, and control gave me safety, and I really needed to feel safe and stable. And if I surrendered, then I didn't know what was going to happen. And so my sponsor one day said to me, she goes, Valerie, look back on your life and think about all of the things that your higher power has gotten you through, and think about how, despite your control, you got through all your lack of control. Despite all of that, you have gotten through all of the things that you needed to get through. And you were put where you were supposed to be put at the right time. And so why wouldn't you surrender to someone who wants to take care of you? And when she said that, it made me look at the whole situation in a completely different way. And Encouraged to Change, on page 283, it says, I'm so grateful to Al-Anon for helping me learn to surrender. It took a long time, but I finally realized that surrender does not mean submission. It means I'm willing to stop fighting reality and to stop trying to do what God's part and to do my own. And that reading really resonated with me. And also for me, I've learned about this character defect that I have of arrogance and self-righteousness, because I'm pretty sure that I know what everybody in this room should do and how they should do it, because I know what's best, right? And if everybody would just do what I said they should do, then all would be well. And then I discovered that really I know none of those things, And that was a big realization for me, that I came at most situations with that kind of feeling inside. And my motive for helping people was, well, I should just show you what to do and then everything will be good. So after all of that, I also had to accept that this was a disease that I have to deal with every day, and that this disease is out to kill and destroy. And it doesn't really care whether it kills or destroys the alcoholic or it kills or destroys me. And I'm the only one that has a choice as to whether or not it kills and destroys me. And that in Al-Anon, I've got the tools now to flip how I look at things and to flip how I deal with things and to flip how I react to things. And if my qualifiers having a day where he's irritable, and you know, when they talk about alcoholism, they're irritable and discontent, it doesn't have to be my shtick anymore, right? And that I have to learn then, how am I going to deal, and rather than react, how am I going to behave in that situation? So, and I can love the alcoholic and hate the disease. And that's huge for me. And another reading, Encouraged to Change, it said, my acceptance of this family disease allows me to stop wasting energy fighting a hopeless battle and to turn instead to sources of genuine help and hope, Al-Anon and my higher power. So now I have people I can talk to, I have people I can phone, I have a sponsor that I can, you know, bounce things off of and say, how do I deal with this? So living with this disease means that I have to accept there's going to be days where things aren't going to go real well. And that's okay. And I need to be gentle with myself. If I have one of those days, if I'm not in a good spiritual space, how I react to my alcoholic is not well. And as a result, there's going to be conflict, there's going to be things. But that's okay, because I suffer from codependency and that disease, and I often will look at him for validation instead of looking to me. So those are things that I need to do. I can't control another person's actions or behaviors. All I can do is take care of myself and respond instead of reacting, and I need to turn my life and my will over to my higher power. And actually, acceptance and surrender have given me a whole lot of freedom. It's not my job anymore to tell anybody else how to live their life. I no longer feel the need to control and to run the whole entire world. God's in charge of that, and he's a whole lot better at it than I am. I can choose to be peaceful and serene despite what's going on around me. I'm responsible for my own happiness, and that acceptance and surrender are attitudes that open doors to me living a really good life. So thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for your sharing, Val. That was wonderful. Diane.
I'm Diane. I have a voice issue, so if you can't understand me, please raise your hand. It's called essential tremors. So, when I heard about the topic for this panel, I knew that I had to volunteer. I am a very grateful member of the Al-Anon Fellowship, and my journey has been long and difficult at times, but I would not be sitting in this chair had it not been for my friends, my sponsors, and the thousands and thousands of hours I have spent in Al-Anon, and for that, I am grateful. I grew up in an alcoholic family. My mother was the alcoholic. And the first message she passed on to me, that I was a mistake. I was not a wanted child. She didn't want me, and my father didn't want me. And she was, in her disease, a very crazy, vicious woman. So I lived with my grandparents, and it was interesting because, as I've learned in this program, I've looked back, is that actually she behaved like a sibling, and she was always trying to compete with my grandfather for attention. Now, because of family dynamics, I've had my grandparents move to Florida 1 year, and we lived on an island so that she couldn't drink. And yeah, that's, I mean, you went, but they didn't know. I mean, we're talking about the 1940s, you know. They did not know what to do with this child. And not only that, both of her brothers, my uncles, and their wives and their families were all alcoholics, too. Now, see, all these kids had gone to college in the 30s, and they made bathtub gin, et cetera. But I'm sure, you know, the family gene was there before. So one year, my grandparents, when I was 7, left me at home with my mother and went to Florida. I'm in New York, they're in Florida. So I'm taking care of my mother. So this is the beginning, really, of what I call delusionary thinking. Because at 7, I'm thinking I can run the world, you know, I'm taking care of this woman. And so that's my first bit of real delusional thinking. So I got sent off to camps in the summer for 8 weeks. I got sent to private schools. Oh, it was a church school, and I prayed. We had chapel 3 times a day. I prayed to God to make my mother stop drinking. Well, she didn't, of course. Her drinking got worse, and of course, I took it upon myself, there was something wrong with me. God didn't love me, so the hell with you. So when I got out of high school and left home, that was it. I wanted nothing more to do with my family, nothing more to do with my religion. And I went out and spent 3 decades of making really, really bad choices. And I can say that today. And not, and getting more angry. You know, it's like, why is this happening to me? It's not fair. I'm a good person. I'm smart. My life isn't working. And I used to tell people, everybody got a instruction book when they grew up, and I got mine, and it was missing a hell of a lot of pages because my life is not going well. So lots of bad, boyfriends. Of course, where did I meet them? Bars, right? They were exciting. I always loved alcoholics because they had the courage to do the things that I really wanted to do, but I was a first-class coward, you know? So, you know, but then it got to the point they're drinking. I didn't want to be around them because it was my fault. If you weren't such a bitch, I wouldn't have to drink, you know? If you weren't such a bad, so bad and bad, I wouldn't have to go out and find other women, you know? On and on and on. And I took all of this on. I believed it. I really believed it. Because remember, I have that initial memory of, you're a mistake. We didn't want you. And so I eventually married someone who told me was an alcoholic. I only smoked pot, you know. Anyway, 60s, right? And he was an awful father. He was the kind that said, I'm going in the corner to get a pack of cigarettes, and I'd see him 4 days later. I came home from the hospital from having my daughter, and the only thing in the fridge was a bottle of champagne and a cake, you know? It's like, and he was refusing to work. So, but those were my choices. And still, in my 30s, I had no understanding of this disease. And I believe the only reason that I was able to take care of my children and myself was because of my self-will and my intelligence. Thank God I got to Al-Anon, where people told me about the, you know, the condos they built in their head before they got to the program, and they had stopped feeling. So life continued on. I married a second husband who was a Green Beret, and that was the worst choice. That was the choice that finally got me to the program. He was scary beyond words. When I first met him, all of the guns were under lock and key, the ammo was under lock and key. He was reasonable. By the time, and I, this was a God thing, and in his alcoholism, I am very grateful to him. He kicked us out of the house. But by the time that happened, there were guns all over the house. There were pistols on the bureau with bullets. And my 13-year-old son told me years later that he had a pistol under his mattress. And every night he was deciding whether to come down and kill both of us. But he wouldn't, because he knew that a Green Beret would get up and get him ultimately after being shot with the whole six bullets. So he moved us, and I was in total despair. You know, he said, I don't want to be married to you anymore, you know, and I'm like, but I have to step back a bit. This is more of the, I was not accepting this. Every day he would leave for work. We were in Montana. Every night he came home and he drank a fifth of gin, I mean rum, and every morning he got up and smoked cigarettes and drank coffee and had to drive over a pass to get to Butte, Montana. And every day I prayed that he would drive over that pass, because the children I would be supported by the government, and I wouldn't have to worry. And today I look at that, and I have to accept that. I mean, that is part of me. But this was someone I loved, and I came to that place because of alcoholism, that I wanted him dead. I wanted him dead. And that's this disease. So we moved to Missoula, and I would get the kids up and send them off to school and count the hours until I could go to bed, because I was so depressed and so lost. And a friend I had known from before came up to me one day and said, "How are you?" When I started crying, "My husband is divorcing me." He said to me, "You look like hell. Go to this meeting at the Y at 9:30 on Saturday morning." And I did. And she didn't show up. And there were like 40 people in this room. I didn't know anyone. I didn't know it was Al-Anon. I didn't know what Al-Anon was. And they were very nice. They sat me down. They started the meeting. I heard the word alcohol, and I sobbed for an hour and a half. They passed a box of Kleenex, and I just kept crying. And I kept thinking, nobody's telling me, oh, buck up, you know, or what's your problem, or stopping everything for, oh, what is the matter? But the one thing I heard was, keep coming back. And I went back. I went back. And I cried for an entire month, and I never heard anything except keep coming back. And I heard, we love you. And nobody had really loved me. That was really the root of my problem. And I would dash into relationships because people either said, I love you, or I need you. And so I didn't know any better. So it's taken me a long time in Al-Anon, and I was terribly fearful because of giving up my will. It took me 3 years to do step three. Step three, everyone in my groups were praying for me. They were like, oh God, please let her take sleep. And I had a wonderful sponsor actually talk about gifts of this fellowship. I lived with my sponsor and her husband for a year, and they reparented me. I mean, she was in Al-Anon and he was in AA. And for that, I will always be grateful. I could talk to you for hours because of the miracles. I mean, since I came to the program, my life has been filled with miracles. And today, I am able to accept. You know, it used to be my favorite thing was the three A's, you know. Oh, I'm aware, I accept that, and I'm gonna get to the action. And I learned that acceptance takes a long time. And acceptance, unless I surrender my will to my higher power, acceptance is not going to happen. Or it's not going to be loving acceptance. And often I have to accept things that are difficult. You know, we all recover in different ways and at different paces, but the program has taught me to accept my failed relationships, my loss of family, and that I am enough. And I am loved. And the people who gave me such negative messages, it was their illness speaking. And for that, I will always be grateful. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Diane. Well, you two are a hard act to follow, but we're taught not to compare, so here we go. I will introduce myself. My name is Jean, and I'm from Regina, Saskatchewan in Western Canada. My home group.
Hi, Jean.
My home group there is Stepping Stones. We meet Thursday nights at 7:30, and it's a hybrid meeting. And my Yuma group is the Serenity on Wednesday night at Gila Mountain Church. So just very grateful to be here today. I grew up in a home in Saskatchewan, the western part of Saskatchewan. I have one sibling, a brother. And alcohol wasn't a huge part of my mom and dad's life. Although in the early 60s, that was a time when women were now allowed to go to the pub. And so the Saturday night entertainment for mom and dad and their couple friends was to hop in the car and drive 20 miles west and go to the pub. And I don't think anybody thought about drinking and driving or excessive drinking because it was a new novelty and away they went. I do remember, though, as time went on, the arguments that mom and dad would have the next day. You had a little too much to drink, or you said a few things that shouldn't have been said, and the lateness of the evening and such. So I learned that when mom and dad were going to the pub on Saturday night, Sunday could be an iffy day around the house. And so my older brother and I grew up witnessing that, and we witnessed their inability to communicate. They were manipulative with one another, lots of anger and control. They worked excessively, and they argued a lot. And so those were some of the relationship skills that I saw, if you want to call them skills. What I learned from all of that was I learned as a kid not to create chaos. I needed to get home on my curfew, and I didn't want to be the reason for another argument between mom and dad. So I made sure that I maintained average grades. I just flew below the radar. I didn't want to be a reason why they would be able to have another session, I guess. So what I really learned from them was that if I was responsible, I was valued. If I worked hard, I was an achiever, and they were proud of me when I did those things. And those were the benchmarks of success that I learned as a kid. So my dream when I was in grade 12 was to get away from home, get away from that small town, get out of the house, and be very, very different from my mom and dad. And I wanted several things that I was sure that would make me happy. I wanted to have a job that would allow me to have lots of money so I didn't have to argue over it with anybody. I wanted to have a job that would allow me to travel the world. I think underneath that was the word escape. And I really just wanted to escape from my family of origin. So I moved to the big city, and just about anything was a big city because the town I grew up in had about 40 people. So, but it was, Saskatchewan's got two major cities, and I moved to one of them. And I began a really exciting career. I had a career in travel, and I just loved every minute of it. And I worked at it for quite a number of years. But, you know, when I left, I had my little three-piece set of white Samsonite baggage that we all got for grad gifts, you know, that hard-sided stuff. And, you know, I was feeling invincible, but I just didn't realize the character defects in the baggage that I had with me as I was making my way down the highway. And I had no idea about lessons that I was probably going to learn about myself. So for about the next 5 years, I guess, before I got married, I worked hard. I played a lot of softball in the summer and curled in the winter. So, you know, I had a busy social life, and I had a lot of fun. I maintained contact with my parents in a respectful way, but I didn't make a huge effort to go back home and visit for anything more than a birthday or Christmas, Easter, and that was about it. I was a distanced daughter for sure. I was married for 13 years, and alcohol was a huge part of that marriage. And I left the marriage, and we divorced. We had two daughters, and I will say that my ex-husband was really good about paying child support and always looking after the girls when it was his scheduled time and things like that. And today, we're good friends. You know, we can sit across from one another at a restaurant and be respectful and enjoy one another's company. And for that, that's what Al-Anon taught me to do, was to put aside some of those differences and hurts, and I can do that today. Single parenting was really tough on me. Raising teenagers was a difficult time, and I don't think I really had a blueprint, and it's nobody's fault, but that's the way it was. I didn't have a blueprint for how to raise kids in a happy, loving, trusting environment. So it was very difficult for me. Waiting at the window when the curfew was missed, taking away car privileges, withholding allowances. That's what I was doing with my oldest daughter. And none of it was effective. It's kind of like waiting at the window for the alcoholic and covering the bad checks. So there's a lot of parallels. And I remember one night when my daughter didn't come home on time. She'd missed her curfew completely. And I really didn't know what to do. I just laid on my bed crying. And I can remember just calling out to God and asking God to keep her safe and to bring her home, but most of all to change her. And that was the first time I can ever remember surrendering. And that was my pre-Al-Anon days. But that was my cry for help. Our Courage to Change reader on October 9th says, surrender is not submission to pain and misery. Surrender is a conscious effort to live in reality. And I become teachable when I surrender. And I was a very willing student at that point. I would repeat words of acceptance to my higher power. And I'd say, yes, I know you're going to look after this. And then I'd feel the fear. She'd be late again. And I'd try to force the solutions. And I wasn't willing to let my daughter live her life and be responsible for her choices. I kept saying to God, what do I do? And I kept hearing, live and let live. And it was, you live and let her live. And I needed to surrender and accept the reality and release my fears. And that was tough. One of my fears was that my daughter would disappear from my life. And she did for a number of months. My fear was that she wouldn't look after her type 1 diabetes. And she didn't. And she got sick. And she ended up in the hospital. And there was more than once that the healthcare team came to my ex-husband and I and said, we're not sure. And my fear was that she would get pregnant, and she did. And she gave birth to a beautiful little baby boy. So, you know, I was broken down, I was teachable. Fear didn't serve me very well. And I learned to surrender to what was and to accept that my daughter was making her choices. So, you know, I was dating, and I was engaged. Broke that off. I decided my picker was broken. So, you know, I took a break from that, and then I started dating again, and I met a really nice man, and we dated and got married. And 8 months after we were married, I arrived in the rooms of Al-Anon. It was a fairy tale romance, fairy tale marriage. During our dating time, I thought he drank a little too much, and I guess reality is the word excessively would be used, but I could fix him, and I could control the drinks, and I could manage our social schedule, and everything would be fine. And I was practicing those four M's of mothering, managing, manipulating, and martyrdom. It was all because I could look after things. Martyrdom. And, you know, I can remember going into those rooms of Al-Anon, and I think there's very few of us who enter those rooms of Al-Anon and think, oh, I'm just looking forward to owning all of my harm that I've caused. Oh, yes, and I can't wait to presume goodwill towards everybody, including my husband. So You know, I came with a lot of fear. I came with a lot of sadness. I was afraid. And you showed me courage and love and acceptance. I never, ever felt judged. And that is just the opposite of acceptance for me. So I heard that word serenity a number of times in the serenity prayer. And I surrendered. And I started to release those fears. I attended meetings. I got a sponsor. I learned what it was to let go and let God, to not force solutions, and to focus on my life. And then I started to feel some peace. I accepted that my life, right at that time, really wasn't what I'd hoped for, but it was my reality. I'm living with an active alcoholic who I love very much. He has a disease. I surrendered. And I accepted that I needed to look after myself, change my attitude from that of a victim, and live life on life's terms. His daily drinking continued, and my young grandson passed away. My life was unmanageable, and my grief was really, really deep. And somewhere in that muddle, I became completely teachable. I accepted my higher power, who I call God, as my guide and my strength. And I was living life on life's terms. And I saw my flaws. I saw my character defects. And I started to love myself. I made peace with myself. And when I asked people in my group, what should I do? It was suggested that I pray and I meditate. You'll get the answers. They'll be coming to you. So, you know, I struggled through that time. I surrendered and then I mistrusted. I tried to believe all that was told to me. I'm going to meetings. I'm not drinking. I'm at work. And, you know, after a while, I didn't know what was real and what wasn't, but I knew my higher power was there for me every step of the way. All I thought I wanted at that time was a sober spouse. And he was struggling with his disease, and I was struggling because of someone else's drinking. And so I accepted who he was. He was a beautiful human being, but he had a disease. So, you know, I learned a lot about acceptance. Accepting the reality of what is. I didn't have to agree or approve. And accepting that my existence and the existence of the disease, we could work together. And that was my program of recovery. And so, you know, I think about compassion as one of the gifts of acceptance. And when my husband surrendered to the disease and started his road to recovery, I had so much compassion. And I had compassion for the alcoholics who give up the physical part of it, but then have the struggles of the emotional and mental part of it and the spiritual part. We both had lots of work to do. Al-Anon gave me that opportunity to look at myself and my perspectives. I've learned to accept who I am. And a little footnote, my oldest daughter, who gave me all the grief, is also now a member of Al-Anon. So, you know, at one point, she and her younger sister used to wonder if I was in a cult. And, you know, she came to my husband and I and talked about her alcoholic husband and what could she do. And, you know, we opened our arms to her. And without any judgment, we told her that our stories, which she knew, but we just told her our stories and what each program had done for us. And today, he's sober. I'm not sure if he's in a program or not. And she's in Al-Anon, and they've gone their separate ways, but I can see peace and joy in her voice and her life when we speak with her. So I'm just going to close with a reading from our newest daily reader, A Little Time for Myself, on page 50. It says, when I first came to Al-Anon, I was put off by some members' behaviors. Yet when I heard their stories, I realized that, given their life experiences, the way they behaved made total sense. I found myself flooded with love for them, even though I still might dislike their behaviors. Then one day after a meeting, I went to a nearby fast food place. Usually being part of the jostling humanity there felt oppressive. Suddenly, I realized that if I knew these strangers' stories, I would love them too. Now I feel more comfortable in the world, as if the strangers are just program friends I haven't yet met. So compassion can give me more acceptance for people I know well and for strangers. So thanks for allowing me to share. And now I think we've got a few minutes just to invite anybody that might like to share for a couple of minutes on acceptance and surrender and your experience with it. Those of the person who gave them, take what you liked and leave the rest. The things you heard were spoken in confidence and should be treated as confidential. Keep them within the walls of this room and the confines of your mind. A few special words to those of you who haven't been with us long. Whatever your problems, there are those among us who have had them too. If you try to keep an open mind, you will find help. You will come to realize there is no situation too difficult to be bettered and no unhappiness too great to be lessened. We aren't perfect. The welcome we give you may not show the warmth we have in our hearts for you. After a while, you'll discover that though you may not like all of us, you'll love us in a very special way, the same way we already love you. Talk to each other, reason things out with someone else, but let there be no gossip or criticism of one another. Instead, let the understanding, love, and peace of the program grow in you one day at a time. Will all who care to join me in closing with the Al-Anon Declaration. Let it begin with me.